Welcome to another episode of Superheroes and Sci-Fi Musings with Adam and Ryan. I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Ryan, how's it going?
It's pretty good. Pretty good. Short work week for me. I was out of town last Friday to Monday visiting my boyfriend in Louisiana. Yes. So,
awesome. We had a very
good time.
Awesome.
Literally, as he picked me up from the airport, we went to the theater and saw Shazam.
And that's dedication, folks.
Exactly. Our first input.
As every DC fan should do, whatever you're doing, whether it be on a plane or not, as soon as you get off, if there's a DC movie in theaters,
you go to the theater.
That's right.
Exactly.
How are you today? I'm doing well. I'm getting over. A little bit of a cold that I'm getting over, but you know, I'm surviving. And my hockey team had a good first game in their playoff series. I'm not going to get too ahead of myself, but I was very happy about that. And yeah, things are relatively good. We got a lot of news to cover today, so we'll get to that in just a bit.
Why? Did something happen today?
A couple things.
Today, Friday, April the 12th of 2019, did something drop?
Yeah, well, there was an indie trailer for an indie movie that dropped. Nobody's ever heard of it. Also, this independent movie and TV streaming service just revealed some details. So we'll be talking about that amongst other things. Mm-hmm. But before we get to that, as we always do, do you have any comic book recommendations?
I do. This is it's from a few weeks ago, but I wanted to bring it up because it is my first ever Spawn comic.
Oh, good.
Starting all the way off in 295.
Hey, you know, man, when you decide to start a book, you really go way back. You go right to the beginning.
Nope. I'm committed to this. I mean, I've gotten that Spawn Resurrection trade I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, and while out at a Half Price Books, I actually picked up like an original like version of the Volume 1 collecting issues 1 through 8, 11, and 12. Oh, cool. But actually, like being able to have the time to sit down and read 295.
Yeah,
295 is my first, and. You know, based off of just this, I can see why people were eating this up back in the 90s.
So you enjoyed it?
Very, very much so. Obviously, there were, you know, I'll try not to go into spoilers much for it, but there were, you know, I knew of Spawn, obviously. I knew of who the Violator was, obviously. Yes. But some of, like, the other characters that, I don't know if you read the issue.
I haven't read that one yet. It's in my digital file.
Okay.
That I have to read, but yes.
The way I'll describe them, and you'll know what I'm talking about when you get to them, there were some shadow creatures that showed up like towards the end that I didn't know who they were, and I had to do a little bit of research on. But I just thought that this was like incredible, and you know, I'm starting 295 issues into an ongoing series, but you know, it sounds like the next two issues after this will be kind of like almost like a recap of Spawn and you know, Al Simmons' life, and you know, I'm just a couple issues shy of, you know, issue 300, which is going to be a huge milestone. So I'm hooked.
And the art's pretty fantastic, isn't it?
It is. It's very good. It's very, you know, it is very unique.
And it fits the character, though, don't you think?
It does, because it is, you know, graphic and gruesome, which, you know, it's good. I don't know how else I can say it other than it's just real good. And, you know, I'm glad that I'm finally starting Spawn. So
I'm glad you are, so we can dedicate a couple episodes down the road.
Congratulations, Todd McFarlane, you've suckered me in.
Maybe what we'll do is when it hits 300 episodes, we'll do a Spawn 300 issues. We'll do a Spawn dedicated episode. How about that?
That works. Yeah, that works for me. It looks
cool.
Look forward to it.
Awesome. Well, my recommendation is the most recent issue, which for whatever reason I can't seem to find where I put it, of Captain Marvel. I love this new series, just the series as a whole. I think you mentioned that you started putting it on your pull list as well, Ryan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, basically she's back on Earth after having been away doing heroic things in space. But she's back and she's been transported via a villain to a place that is sort of where basically the female, there's a female-led resistance against this villain known as Nuclear Man. No, and I'm not talking about the Superman from Superman 4 with the fingernails.
So he doesn't go around saying destroy Superman?
No, unfortunately. I'm sure everybody at Disney would jump to the chance to put that in there. So there's forming a resistance against this Nuclear Man character, and so basically we're at the point where Captain Marvel and her crew sort of raid Nuclear Man's location, and she runs into a surprise opponent in the form of Rogue, the X-Men character, who is being mind controlled. And there's a fantastic summation of via flashbacks of their history together, Rogue and Captain Marvel, and as well as there's a cool fight scene which I will not spoil between the two. And I didn't. What I will say is I didn't realize how powerful Rogue is up until, like, you know, it's always been alluded to in the X-Men films that if she touches you for too long, she can kill you, which is not good for a boyfriend, but. Sucks to be him. Or as the Joker used to say, if you get a goal, go with a smile. So why not? The fight scene was really cool. And I hope that when we do get the X-Men in the MCU, that possibly we could get Rogue introduced, maybe in a Captain Marvel 2, and sort of explore that history in the movies as well. That'd be kind of cool to watch unfold. So that's my recommendation. I want to say it's issue 3 or 4, but the whole series. I mean, there's only 4 of them, so yeah. I'm almost 4. So I recommend that if you like the movie, or if you're curious about the character now that she's going to be in the soon-to-be multi-billion-dollar Endgame film, you might want to check this out. But that's my recommendation. So let's get on with the news. We'll start with some non-Marvel stuff, Ryan. You remember the Tomb Raider reboot from, I want to say it was last year. Am I right in that?
Yeah. I'm going to look that up, but I assume so last year.
Starring Alicia Vikander in the role. A movie which I liked quite substantially.
Yep, from last year.
Okay. Go on. It's a movie I liked quite substantially. I mean, it did decently considering its budget at the box office. But up until recently, we hadn't really heard anything in regards to a follow-up, even though the film naturally ends with a sort of tease at what could come next, as most franchise hopefuls do. But thankfully, today, we have word that, yes, indeed, a sequel, not a reboot, a sequel, is moving forward. Alicia Vikander will resume the role of Lara Croft once again. And I'm just trying to find the name, but the project does have writers on board. If I can just find the name of those writers. I will tell you who they are in just a second. I just had it pulled up. And now, as professional as ever, it's not escaping me. Hold on.
Well, I think everyone knows by now that we are a very professional podcast.
Speak to your knowledge of what I find this. what I find this article.
My exposure to the whole all the Lara Croft Tomb Raider, you know, franchise and multimedia empire that is the first two movies with Angelina Jolie, which it has been probably a decade since I've seen either of them, but I, you know, do remember seeing that kind of stuff with, you know, my dad. I'm pretty sure I even saw one of the movies in theaters. And also, I never finished it, but I did play a good chunk of, I forgot what year the game was released, but when they decided to reboot the video game series as well, and kind of focus on a younger Lara Croft and pretty much telling her origin story, I played a bit of that game, and even though I didn't finish it, because, you know, just sometimes I just don't finish video games. Life gets in the way, and I can't, you know, dedicate. I can't always dedicate, you know, days to, you know, finishing up stuff and whatnot. But I, like I said, I really did like it. And when news of this movie from last year, the reboot of the film franchise, you know, started, I don't know. I just seemed kind of gung-ho, like hardcore wanting Daisy Ridley to be Lara Croft. I just thought she always had the look of it.
Sure.
So, you know, I was a little bummed when, you know, she wasn't cast. I did have every intention of wanting to go see this movie in theaters, either by myself or with my dad, who, you know, likes these kind of things. I unfortunately never materialized. And I was actually kind of taken aback today when, you know, the news of, you know, bringing on a writer for the sequel and that she's going to be coming back. Because, you know, it has been a year since the movie came out. It made over $200 million against its, you know, $90 million budget. But it, you know, got mixed responses. It, you know, they probably some at the studios might, you know, interpret as a, you know, underperformed or something. But even though I haven't seen the movie, and actually now with the news of the sequel being green, you know, maybe not greenlit, but it's in development, it's actually motivated me to want to see it.
And I think part of it is also. You know, I think what they did was came up with ideas and took them to Alicia Vikander, because, I mean, she's an Oscar-winning
What is she an Oscar winner
for? I can't remember what she won for, but I know that she's an Academy Award winner. Oh. But
Hold on. Well, to the internet.
Yes. but let's see. It says here that the writer is a woman by the name of Amy Jump. And I want to make a pun there, but I won't because it's cheesy. Her previous credits include the Brie Larson starring Free Fire, as well as the movie High Rise starring Tom Hiddleston. So I've never seen either of those movies. But if she's written for Captain Marvel and Loki before, it's good enough for me. But apparently Alicia Vikander was very taken by her pitch for the sequel. So that fills me with some confidence. And also, like I said, $90 million budget, $274 million. That's profit.
Yeah.
That's a profitable film. I mean, you know, for a $90 million film, once you hit sort of 220, the 220 area, you're in, you're starting to get into the profit zone. So that probably turned on a profit for them. And again, you're rebooting a franchise, so you can't expect, and a franchise that had been gone from the from the public eye in terms of film since what? When was the last Terminator? 2003 or 2004? Something along those lines. I'm asking you to search a lot of stuff.
Putting
you in overtime today.
2003 was the last one.
Before, so you're talking about a what? 14-year absence on film. It's not going to light. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to do gangbusters. But I think more from what I understand, most of the fan base enjoyed this version. So, you know, coming with a sequel, I think will cause hopefully increased profitability even more so on the sequel. So I'm excited that it's coming back for sure.
And Alicia Vikander, is that how you say your last name?
Yes, that's Vikander. How I say it. I don't know if it's right.
She won the Academy Award Best Supporting Actress and a whole bunch of other awards too for the Danish Girl from back in 2015.
Cool. So there you go. So I'm excited for this sequel news.
Yeah, I'm excited too, even though I never saw it.
And don't you worry. When you do watch it, you'll let me know, and we'll do a Tomb Raider episode, and maybe we can do it. We can even review the Angelina Jolie movies because I enjoyed those.
Yeah, from what I remember, I remember enjoying them. You know.
Well, listen, Angelina Jolie could read a phone book in a movie, and I'd be engrossed. So. So there's that. I'm excited for this, and I can't wait to see it unfold as things develop further. We'll keep you updated on all that stuff as well. Let's talk a little bit of Disney, shall we?
Sure.
All right, so start with the superhero side of things. Disney unveiled some of their plans for Disney Plus, the streaming service. They gave us a price point, which is going to be, I believe, $6.99 per month, and $69.99 per year. Correct?
Yep, sounds about right. If anything, if I can, off the top of my head, it's cheaper than what DC Universe is doing.
Yeah, because DC was what?
I think that was 70 something, not like close to 80, but it was still like maybe like 74, 75, 99.
So it was like $7 some odd per month.
Yeah.
Or $8 per month or something like that. Yeah. It's a cheaper price point. And in terms of the content that we care about on this podcast, which is namely the Marvel and Star Wars stuff, they confirmed that we're going to get The Mandalorian, which is the Jon Favreau. Produced Star Wars live action series. And on the Marvel side of things, they confirmed and
There's also going to be the
Clone Wars.
Clone Wars is coming back, and also the Rogue One prequel series.
Yes. Yeah. So we get two live action Star Wars series. And at least one animated that we know of. Mm-hmm. But then on the Marvel side of things, they confirmed, which I'm really excited about, by the way, the first ever live-action Star Wars series is very appealing to me. Because I think waiting every 2-3 years for a fan like me and you who wants all this stuff all the time, now we'll get more of it. So that's good. And I think the Star Wars stories lend themselves to episodic television as well.
To the point that they're, you know, the overwhelming majority of their movies are referred to as episode this, episode that.
Right.
Yeah.
And then on the Marvel side, we got confirmation and of the Loki series, which confirmed that Tom Hiddleston will indeed return as Loki. We got confirmation of the Falcon and Winter Soldier series, which will star Sebastian Stan as Winter Soldier and Anthony Mackie as Falcon. We also got some logos, but I mean, it's pointless to talk about a logo. Maybe I'll post the logo on the website or on the Facebook page. We also got confirmation of WandaVision, and yes, that's what it's called. It sounds like a ship name, but it is the series that will star Elizabeth Olsen as Scarlet Witch and Paul Bettany as the Vision. And then, not confirmed with a logo or a series title, but reported by the ever-reliable Variety, is that they are also developing a Hawkeye series for Disney streaming service that will feature Jeremy Renner's Clint Barton training his successor, Kate Bishop, who will be familiar to Marvel fans. So that's a lot of cool stuff in there, Ryan, and all the stuff I mentioned, the stuff that I'm eager to see. How about you?
Just take my money already? I mean, I mean, there'll be other stuff on the Disney Plus, you know, their whole entire library, 30 seasons of The Simpsons, you know, non-Marvel, non-DC, you know, Disney Plus originals.
Oh, they're definitely won't be in a DC.
What did I say? Did I say DC?
You said non-DC. I said they're definitely won't be in a DC.
Yeah, I mean Marvel.
I'm sorry.
That I can
spoiler alert, Disney's going to buy DC now. Everyone panic about monopolies.
Oh, God, you know it's going to be on Twitter within 5 minutes.
All right, non-Marvel, non-Star Wars. Okay. Like a Jeff Goldblum National Geographic show. Okay, it's Jeff Goldblum. I'm going to check it out. You know, there's going to be a, I don't know if it's an adaptation or a continuation of the Love, Simon movie. You know, the fact that Disney, for their streaming service, is going to have, you know, front and center, you know, an LGBT, you know, coming of age story. Sure. I think, you know, that's a beautiful thing, you know, and that it just makes me happy to see Disney, you know, becoming more and more progressive and whatnot with all that stuff. But all right, let's cut the shit. It was the Marvel and Star Wars stuff that I was looking forward to the most. You know, Mandalorians, I don't know, you know, my knowledge of Mandalorian, you know, lore and mythology comes from the Knights of the Old Republic video games.
Sure.
And considering that this is, you know, going to be historic as the first, you know, Star Wars live action show, I'm pumped for it. And the fact that they're also bringing back a lot of MCU directors.
Yeah.
To be involved in, you know, production and directing of episodes, that just, it's going to be fun.
Agreed.
I never watched Clone Wars.
Oh, boy.
It's
something special, I'll tell you that much.
I adore
that show.
I never had an issue with it. I never got around to it. I kind of hope that Disney will put all the seasons of it along with the new, you know,
I could see that being a thing.
I hope so. Loki, I just hope that the show is just, you know, tales of Tom Hiddleston's Loki, you know, just causing mischief throughout human history from when he was a child until, you know, the events of the first Thor. And I also really like that these shows, you know, Loki, Falcon, Winter Soldier, WandaVision, they're going to be MCU based,
mm-hmm.
you know, like technically S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Netflix stuff. However, it sounds like, unlike all those other shows, stuff that happens in these shows will actually matter in the movies and vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah, and no, the tagline, it's all connected, is finally going to bear fruit.
Yeah, it finally means something, you know, after that was announced in 2013. Now in 2019, it actually finally means something.
Yeah, so that'll be exciting. The only thing that
Go on.
No, go ahead, finish your thought.
No, I'm just, you know, like I explained to my dad, who is, you know, collected. He's a big-time Marvel guy. He collected you know, Marvel, you know, since childhood. So this is like, you know, in the 60s. He loves that there's going to be dedication to Scarlet Witch and the Vision and exploring that relationship more. Because he
Does he guys ship those two? By the way,
he was very happy in Age of Ultron when they, you know, hinted at it, and then in Civil War and then Infinity War when they, you know, kept on exploring it.
Okay.
So I wouldn't go as far as to say ship it. But yeah. Just, okay. You know, he's a fan of that relationship from the comics, and he's just happy to see them, you know, if it's not cinematically, at least still within continuity with those actors.
So he doesn't run around saying, you know, WandaVision forever from the first
Stone
to the last.
He does not.
All right, good.
No, he does not.
Okay, good.
But there is and Falcon Winter Soldier, I like their Winter Soldier and Civil War. I'm trying to figure out like how to describe it, where it's like
they're dynamic.
They're dynamic together, but they're also how they're playfully
antagonistic.
They're playful antagonism towards each other because they both want to be Captain America's best friend.
Right.
And if they always feel like they're in competition, at least that's how it kind of came across as.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cute and precious. And I'm not saying that they have to explore that, but, you know, in this series, but I am excited that we're going to get more Falcon, we're going to get more Winter Soldier, and be able to explore the, you know, those characters' backstories along with, you know, their... I don't mean it in the term you're probably thinking of, but their relationship together.
Yeah,
as friends and allies, you know, that'll be cool.
People can have a relationship and not be sexual, folks.
Exactly.
It's 2019, get over it.
However, there was one show you didn't mention, Adam, that I'm actually looking forward to.
Yes,
If I had to rank these shows, which I hate doing, but if I had to, I'm actually looking forward to this one the most.
Yeah,
it is an animated Marvel's What If,
mm-hmm.
and it is based off of, you know, there were What If comics that kind of explored I guess if you want to call it the Marvel multiverse, about, you know, different realities and different timelines and what if this happened with this character and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've already said that the first episode of this What If series is going to explore what if Peggy Carter in World War II was the one who took the super soldier serum and became Captain America instead of Steve Rogers. Right. And I am just... take my money already.
And the cool thing is, Kevin Feige said that they're hoping to get the actor, or as many as they can, the actors who play the roles in the MCU to reprise. So
that's Haley Atwell. I'm still gonna forever be upset that Agent Carter got canceled after only two seasons.
I enjoyed this show.
I loved it so damn much. And it would be nice to actually see her live action again. But if they can bring her in to voice Captain America, Peggy Carter, for this What If show, and like you said, to bring in, you know, the actual real actors when their characters are involved, the actual real actors from the MCU to voice them, I think that is brilliant. And I'm looking forward to it.
And, you know, just to point out that she's on the list, Haley Atwell.
I should not even be surprised anymore.
I just had to put that in, but which we'll start revealing in August, by the way. Still committed to that. I'm the only negative I have, and this is Adam's angry kind of works into that. Is the fact that, much like the DC Universe streaming service, Disney Plus will not be available worldwide. Or in Canada specifically, because that's what I care about, because I'm Canadian, at launch. Now, I'm sorry, but it's 2019. And why can you not have a worldwide launch? Can you explain that to me?
No, I'm still pissed that Warner Brothers hasn't figured out how to do DC Universe worldwide for you guys.
And, like, do they really expect that I'm not going to watch The Mandalorian? Or that I'm not going to watch Bucky and Falcon, or whichever one comes first, WandaVision, or whatever it is? I got news to you, for you. I'm going to watch it. I'm ready, willing to give you my money, and you expect me to wait. And it says, over the course of the first 2 years, it'll expand to worldwide markets. Well,
you expect me... 2 years is a long time.
Look, we got to review this crap on the podcast. There ain't no way I'm waiting that long. So when you launch it here, I'll pay for it. Until then, well, I'll find ways to watch it, and I'll leave it at that. But that pisses me off, and that makes Adam angry. So I just want to put that out there.
And you know what? No, a mini Ryan's rant. Come on, Warner Brothers. Come on, Disney. Bruh. Why? There are people internationally, outside of the United States, who, you know, have found ways to watch your shows without waiting for everything to drop on Netflix internationally.
And would rather give you our money.
I know two people, very, very, very close friends of mine, who have watched, you know, Titans and Doom Patrol and Young Justice in ways that didn't require money, but they would be more than happy to give you money to support these streaming platforms of DC Universe and Disney Plus if you just made it available to them. I don't understand why it's so hard. I really don't. And honestly, I'm kind of surprised that Disney Plus isn't doing it. Like, yeah, why?
I thought they would, but for whatever reason, they're not. I mean, work out the kinks. I mean, the thing isn't launching until November. You got time to work out the kinks.
Exactly.
I don't get it, but it bothers me. And
And
that's why Adam's angry and why Ryan is ranting.
Just bruh. This is probably the shortest Ryan's rant. Just bruh. Just come on, bruh.
Yeah. But there is other news in terms of...
something else happened today?
Yes. We finally got the long-awaited title for the Star Wars Episode 9, as well as a trailer to go along with it. So, Ryan, tell everybody what the title is.
Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker.
And
this will be the movie that ends the not the Star Wars saga, but the 9-part Skywalker saga.
Right. Well, with you know, Lucasfilm and Disney taking this actual title, I'm going to be fascinated to find out what the porn parody title is, because it sounds perfect to be the porn parody title. But I like the title. It's very evocative of you know, what could potentially happen. But what did you think of the trailer?
I just wow, just impressive. It's just impressive. It's like I'm trying to pick out one, you know, like a favorite part from it, and I can't. Maybe by default, you know, the first half of the trailer, which is, you know, Rey standing in the desert. I don't know if it's supposed to be Jakku or if we're going back to Tatooine to end it all, since that's where it all began. If we're
back to the beginning is what.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping it is Tatooine.
Yes, yeah.
for that thematic.
Sure.
You know, to have it end where it all began.
Sure.
You know, facing off against, you know, just Rey all by herself, facing off against the TIE fighter, I think it's clearly being piloted by a Kylo.
Yeah, that was a Vegeta, because you see the gloves.
Gloves, but
it's either Batman or Kylo. That was my reaction.
Oh my God, a surprise appearance by Ben Affleck as Batman in Star Wars episode.
Yeah, it's called the, it's the, actually, I'm not going to go there. I better not. I'm not going there. Release the Abrams cut. No,
release the Abrams. Oh my
God. The that moment was pretty cool, and it reminded me of, you know what it reminded me of, or gave me echoes of, not in the same way but similar, when Batman is riding or the Batpod,
oh yeah,
full speed toward the Joker.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were gonna go with the North by Northwest, which is what I was also thinking of too, of when he was being chased by the plane in the cornfield.
Right. No. Yeah. But just
the
tension of the moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Echoes that a lot. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Oh, what's gonna happen now? And then she does that backflip.
And you know that she's gonna slice open the top of that TIE fighter and.
So that was visually, that was my favorite shot.
Mm-hmm. My second favorite visual shot was seeing part of the Death Star in the ocean of a planet.
Yeah. I really hope they don't bring another Death Star into the equation.
We
need to move on from this plot point now.
I'll be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if we do have a Starkiller base part 2, but this actually looks like an actual piece of the original, of the Return of the Jedi Death Star that has fallen onto a planet and, you know, it's just kind of sticking out of the ocean. And I'm wondering, WTF, what's going on? Why are they going back to a chunk? Why did they have to find a chunk of the Death Star? Or maybe it's just by accident. I don't know.
You know the visual moment that got to me? And I mean, it's so small. And so, in terms of the on-screen time, so minuscule. Mm-hmm. But Chewbacca and Lando, played by Billy Dee Williams in the Millennium Falcon.
It was so great to see him back. Yeah.
And it looks like he's having a ball.
Uh-huh.
That was, you know, for longtime fans, that's mm-hmm. one of those legacy moments. It reminded me of when we first saw, you know, Harrison Ford.
Han and Chewie for Force Awakens.
We're home. Chewie, we're home.
Oh. The moment that got me emotionally and actually to the point of a little teary-eyed was, I think it's like in the forest or something, but Rey holding and hugging Leia, knowing, you know, that they were only using, you know, unused footage from the last two movies for this, for Leia, and that this is going to be the last time we're ever going to see Carrie Fisher as Leia. I just know that it's...
Yeah.
Every single scene that features Leia, General Organa, I should say, is not... There will not be a dry eye left in the theater after every single scene.
Probably not.
I mean, I'm starting to get a little choked up just talking about it. Because Carrie Fisher's death was one of the, I don't mean to say this in a way that makes me sound like a heartless monster, but I don't really get. There've only been a small handful of celebrity deaths that got to me to the point where it almost felt like I lost a family member. Off the top of my head, I can only think of three: Robin Williams, Leonard Nimoy, and Carrie Fisher, where I actually mourned and I cried because of what happened.
Sure.
And I know that I'm, you know, regardless, I'm the movie Rise of Skywalker, it's going to be brilliant and wonderful. I'm, you know, willing to bet all my money on it. But regardless of quality of the movie at the end of the day, it's going to be those moments with Leia that, you know, I dare anyone to try and say something bad about him.
Yeah, because you know that we're all itching to see where they go with her story, right?
And mm-hmm.
So, but those are gonna, no matter what happens, Those have a lot of emotional impact for sure.
Yeah, and those are going to be moments that everyone remembers.
But I love this trailer. I think, you know, this movie sells itself. The only negative is having to listen to the man babies who have this picture of them moving their head already and will undoubtedly be disappointed when it doesn't, you know, follow their script in their head. But aside from that,
people that have that still have not forgiven Disney for, you know, ditching, you know, original expanded universe continuity. Okay. Second mini Ryan's rant of the episode. My dad is a hardcore Star Wars person. He read almost all of the original expanded universe novels and comic books and whatnot. He got over it. He's accepted that, okay, they, you know, Disney, when they brought, you know, when they brought Star Wars on and they took control, that, you know, they were going to only keep, you know, movies and certain books and characters and cartoons, canon, everything else is, you know, to start fresh.
Yeah.
Get over yourselves, people, please. I've accepted that my Superman in the comics is no longer around. My dad has accepted that the Star Wars canon that he grew up with is not, it's still around for him to read, but it's not what he's going to see on screen.
Sure.
Yeah. Bruh. Yeah.
That's going to be your new tagline for
whenever someone does something so stupid to piss me off, I'm just like, bruh. But there is one more moment. Well, there are two things I want to bring up about the trailer, as my final thoughts. Yeah. One was, it took me two viewings of the trailer to realize that cackling laugh at the end.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds awfully familiar.
Joker. It's a DC and Marvel crossover that doesn't involve Marvel.
Palpatine is coming back. Darth Sidious, Emperor Palpatine is going to make a comeback somehow.
I thought of the Joker the whole time. You know?
Well, there was, you know, the Emperor Joker storyline.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. That's what came to my head, actually. I was watching it.
So I don't even know how they're going to do that. I mean, I think it's kind of obvious that, you know, we know that Luke is coming back, but that's clearly going to be as, you know, a Force ghost. But what's going on with, you know, Palpatine? I have no answers. I have no theories. I have not. It's just kind of exciting that, you know, the person who was far more evil than Darth Vader ever could have been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the longest running antagonist in this, you know, movie franchise is coming back for the big finale. It's I said it on Twitter as kind of a joke, but, you know, I'm kind of being serious a little bit too. The Resistance probably just shit themselves when they heard that laugh.
Yeah, probably.
And my last theory,
or it was exceptionally creepy, that's for sure.
Exactly. It was. My last thought is, you know, about why they're calling it The Rise of Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not the originator of this theory. I don't even know who this started off with. I've just heard it a couple of times on Twitter, and I'm running with it because I actually really like the idea.
Cool.
That it's, you know, obviously a reference to the Skywalker family and, you know, their legacy in, you know, the Star Wars universe and their impact on it. But I feel like, and I'm agreeing with this theory, that from episode 9 and going forward in the Star Wars universe and lore and mythology, that the reason why this is being called The Rise of Skywalker is that Force users, good, bad, middle of the ground, you know, middle of the road, you know, we will no longer have Jedi. We will no longer have Sith. There will be, you know, this movie will bring about some kind of maybe permanent status quo change to, you know, a balance in the Force.
Sure.
And that Force users will be referred to as Skywalkers.
Interesting theory.
I fell in love with it the moment I heard it for the first time today, and I'm all on board.
I think that's a good theory, but I think that having it, you know, titled Rise of Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I think they're gonna sort of. When I saw The Last Jedi, I thought that when Kylo Ren said to Rey, "You're nobody,"
mm-hmm.
I thought that was a giant misdirection, because for most of The Force Awakens, you know, they were hyping her up as, who is she? You know, like when they would talk about her, there was this mystery in the air, and there's, you know, this excitement of, oh, is she somebody special? And then to have thing. In Kylo Ren's era, you know, but I think that was a giant misdirection, and I think it is going to be revealed that she is part of the Skywalker lineage, Rey. Now, if that doesn't happen, I'm not going to whine about it like a baby on social media. I'll just take what the filmmakers give me, and
mm-hmm.
I hope that it's executed well. Mm-hmm. But that's what I think is going to happen. So we'll see.
Yeah, but, because I think it's like a 50-50 situation with me. I think it'll be just as emotionally and thematically impactful if she is somehow has the Skywalker lineage in her. And also, it would be just as impactful if, you know, if she was truly a nobody from parents who were nothing special, and yet this ordinary child, you know, was born and developed, you know, an ability to use the Force that, you know, is almost unparalleled, and, you know.
Yeah.
I personally would be okay with either. You know,
that's, yeah, all. For me, it'll come down to execution.
Mm-hmm.
But basically.
Yep.
But that's it. We'll be there opening weekend.
Oh, my. If I got to make sure I buy my tickets, because
in December,
I think it's going to, you know, the record that was set by Endgame with pre-sale tickets, I think it's pretty obvious that.
Oh, you think so?
That Star Wars. Yeah, I think Rise of Skywalker is going to just shatter that and make that look like they're going to make it look like nobody wanted to see Endgame.
Interesting.
Like, I'm going to have my phone in my hand that whole morning and click the second tickets go online, because I'm kind of genuinely worried that I won't be able to get for me and my dad to see Star Wars.
Interesting. Well, Disney won't care which one breaks the record, because
they're going to have the record anyway.
Yeah.
They are Scrooge McDuck. I don't mean that to describe them. I'm just, you know, as people, I'm just describing it as the, you know, swimming in pools of money.
Sure. Yeah, I get it. But we'll be there, and until then, we'll continue to bring you the developments as we hear them. But let's get on to tonight's review, shall we? Which mm-hmm. is the latest episode of Roswell, New Mexico.
Which welcome back.
Yes.
It wasn't that long of a break, but it kind of felt like it.
Yeah, a week, but still.
Uh-huh.
What was this episode about, Ryan?
Season 1, Episode 11, Champagne Supernova. That just sounds like a fun title. As the city of Roswell prepares for the UFO Emporium reopening gala, Liz and the team find themselves on a collision course with an unlikely enemy. And I just want to upfront say that this, I'm kind of surprised that there are two more episodes left, because in several ways, to me, this felt like a season finale.
Yeah, if this had ended the season, I would have been totally okay with it.
Uh-huh.
For sure. Go on. It did have a season finale vibe, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that sentiment.
if it was going to be a true season finale, I would have liked for all characters to be involved, and Alex wasn't around.
Yeah.
But, you know, this wouldn't have been a perfect season finale if they had just used this episode without changes, obviously. Sure. But I was genuinely expecting that we were not going to learn the identity of the fourth alien until the actual finale. Nope, we learned it with this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it surprised the hell out of me.
It did me as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's cool, first and foremost, that the group discovers that the fourth alien can now sort of invade or people's minds,
mm-hmm.
Almost like a virus kind of thing. It's like an alien virus. And so for most of the episode, there's a lot of suspicion on Maria.
Mm-hmm.
And what I liked about it, for a lot of it was, for a lot of the episode, I fell into the trap and believed that it was actually Maria.
Likewise. Because the show has been, it's taken broad construct concepts and ideas from the original show and implemented them in new ways, to the point where just, you know, you can have watched the original show, but you would not be able to guess where this new one is going. And sure. Again, that's another strength of this being, again, for me personally, I'm speaking only for myself, that this feels like textbook. This is how you do a reboot correctly. You bring same characters, same maybe broad spectrum, you know, lore, mythology, but you do new and interesting things with it.
Mm.
And like you, I was suckered in and completely buying the concept that, oh my God, maybe this version of Maria is the mass murdering fourth alien.
Yeah. But then, so they figure out that she's not. And that she was, in fact, poisoned.
Mm-hmm.
And the way she does it is, who was it? Sam? Max's coworker, the sheriff, or the deputy, or whatever she is.
Yeah.
She was the one that dipped her finger into the champagne glass.
Mm-hmm.
And she had nail.
Special kind of nail polish that would turn color. If it, like, the chemicals on the nail polish interacted with any kind of drug that would have been, like, you know, snuck into the champagne glass.
Yeah, so now my question is that a real thing, or is that...
That's a real thing, but again, this is also a show about aliens. I mean, I believe in aliens, but I don't believe this exact situation is going on in the
real world. Like, that kind of nail polish, yeah, okay, I'm just checking, because I'm like, really?
I'm looking that up right now, nail polish...
Out of everything in the episode, I'm like, really? Like, that stuck out to me. I'm like, seriously? I mean, it'd be cool if it does.
I'm actually looking for it. Okay, I don't care about ads. Go away.
But so that was, while you're looking that up, that to me was kind of unique. But.
Well, from one article I can find from Snopes.com is that if this thing does exist, it's only a concept, and that they're still testing it out.
Okay. All right.
But this is a fantasy show, so we can kind of suspend belief for a second. So I'm right. Good. Yeah, I'm good with it.
So they're armed with this knowledge that it's the fourth alien is infecting people and taking over their bodies to achieve his goal, his or her goals.
Mm-hmm.
His goals, because he said he's a he. So we also get a scene where both Max and Michael are kidnapped and put in the bunker and exposed to what is it, an alien gas?
Yeah, some kind of like smoke pellet that was in Michael's jacket that it didn't render them or poison them, but it did render them unable to use their powers to escape.
Right. And so, and the reason why he wanted them sequestered is so he could get to Liz and Isabel and Maria as well at the time. So, of course, because this is Roswell, they're two of the leads. You know, Max and Michael get out and get free. And so then it's determined, like it's revealed that once they realize that Maria is not, in fact, the fourth alien, they start tossing around they start thinking back and to what's happened to them over the weeks of the show and stuff. And they come to the conclusion that it could be Isabel's husband.
Noah.
And so Max suggests that Isabel uses her powers to get into Noah's mind to see if he's in fact the alien. And she does so, and that's where it's confirmed that he is. But the cool thing about that, the creepy thing about that was, he was then able to use his powers to convince her that he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, I found very, very freaky.
Mm-hmm. To convince Isabel that he wasn't, and that...
Or to tell the others that he
can't. To tell Isabel to tell Max and the others that, yeah, he was innocent.
Yeah. So, but... Again, this is another twist that I had no idea was coming.
The only reason why I never suspected him was because of, go back a couple episodes when he stumbled across Isabel in the cave, in the pods, and the way he reacted.
Yeah.
Because his reaction was of someone who did, like, what the hell is my wife doing in this thing? You know, what's going on? But that could also be explained in, you know, the next episode or so on. But yeah, it's like they do show flashbacks to previous events in the show, and Noah was the one who pointed Liz in the direction of the conspiracy theorist, and when he was getting shot up, and who did tell Max to stop looking into, to let certain people to just go and to not look into things deeper. I thought he was just trying to be a good lawyer and a good friend. No, these were all threats. And
yeah. No, but what it is? It's the actor's delivery. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the discovery of the pods and being so supportive with his wife and all that stuff, then you can totally forget the almost what, because when they start revealing it and show you how he was involved in the subterfuge, you can kind of see it. But in those moments, it was totally deflected because of the actor's convincing performance. And writers can write that on the paper, but the actor's going to be able to convey that. And so. Mm-hmm. I think he did a masterful job, and so you have to give him props.
Yeah. Now my question is, was Rosa the first murder that's attributed to Noah, or have there been others? Well, okay, I know that there have been others, obviously, but before her, like before Rosa, can you recall of anything? Only because I'm just trying to figure out the timeline of. You know, how long has Noah been in Roswell? You know, is he an alien that doesn't age? Or if he does, was he a teenager? Where was he in that flashback episode?
That's a good question. I don't think anything's been alluded to. And if it has, I've missed it.
Because when Isabel goes into his mind, you know, before he finally just outright outs himself and reveals himself, he does mention that he has and always will love Rosa. Mm-hmm. So he was around in Roswell, you know, 10 years prior.
Right. That's a very good question.
Hopefully it's stuff that will be explained.
I think so. Yeah, I think so, because they've captured him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so from the trailer, it looks like they're going to have an interrogation of sorts where he's going to start revealing answers about his past. So
okay.
Looks like we're going to get those answers.
Because I wonder, is he like a fourth? Because this is me thinking back to the original show. Is he Macedo in the sense that he's been around since the crash, just not in a pod? And is he also at the same time, is he going to be like Tess in that there is a fourth pod somewhere and he came out of it at the same time and just never came, you know, wasn't involved with Max, Michael, and Isabel early on in their lives, if that makes sense.
My personal favorite option, is that he's the Nacedo character of this reboot.
Okay, that they're taking the Nacedo archetype and putting it. Okay,
because I love the character of Tess, and mm-hmm. I want that to be transplanted to the new series in some way.
With the actual character, right? Yeah.
So that's my hope, but we'll see. I mean, hopefully, we'll see.
I hope so too.
Provided that you know CW hurries up and renews the show.
Third rant, bruh. CW, bruh. Come on, a lot of people love this show. Yeah. You got yourselves a fan base. Renew it, please. You got us. Yeah, please.
Let's go. We're giving you free publicity every week.
Exactly. And we've been giving you guys pretty good reviews every single week. So.
Yeah, I don't think there's good. A quote-unquote bad one yet.
Nope.
So speaking of, is there anything else you want to add, or else we can go get to the review part of it?
I just got more questions. You know, I'm glad that we know finally who's behind everything, but why? Now that we know the who, I want to know why. That's all I got to say, and I hope that we get answers next week.
All right. And I'm in agreement with you. So with that being said, let's get on to your favorite part of the show, the rating. Out of 10, what would you rate this episode? Letter grade, whatever you want.
I would give it a solid A.
I'm gonna go ahead and give it an A+ because I had zero problems with this episode. I think that the reveal of the fourth alien was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
They kept the suspense right up until the third act. There was a lot of twists and turns, and like you said, I've got just enough answers but equally as many questions. Mm-hmm. More questions. That keeps me, you know, wanting more. And that's the mark mm-hmm. of any good show, in my opinion.
And last thought. I'm glad that the fourth alien is someone we've already met and not just some character that was going to be brought in for like the last two or three episodes. I'm glad that it was someone who's been here this whole time, because to me that is more dramatic and impactful and emotional of a reveal than just some random stranger we haven't seen for 10, 11 episodes being like, here I am, I'm the villain.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with you there. But that's going to bring our review to an end. Mm-hmm. And so, Ryan, if our listeners want to engage in conversation about Roswell or anything we talked about tonight on social media with you, where can they do that?
If you want to come chat me up on Twitter, because I have nothing witty to say for this week. You can find me at The Amazing Rye Guy.
Okay. Awesome. And if you want to interact with me on Twitter about anything you've heard this week, you can do so at Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter and on Facebook, if that's more your thing. We have a Tales from the DC Multiverse, the podcast group, which encompasses all the podcasts that we do. And so you can ask to be, or you can go there and request to become a member, and either myself, Ryan, or Travis will add you, and we can continue the discussion there. But we hope you enjoyed this episode, because we enjoyed recording it. And whether you're listening to this on a weekday or weekend, we hope you're having a good one. And until next time, be safe, be kind, and live long and prosper.
Take care.